Welcome to Today's Homeowner with Danny Lipford, your partner in home improvement. Everyone has questions about their home. We've got the answers, and we have a few laughs along the way. Informative, entertaining, and sometimes off the wall. Home improvement has never been this much fun.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this hour of Today's Homeowner Radio. I'm Danny Lipford, along with my co-host, Joe Truini. A lot of interesting things we're going to kick around during this hour. I want to talk about mold. Of course, there's always problems with mold, and it's a serious thing to deal with, but a simple thing to take care of. We'll talk about that. Also, insulation problems happening under a house. There's some fundamental things wrong here. We're going to talk about that. Might be something that you are experiencing at your house. We'll see if we can take care of that. We've got water saving tips for you coming up. Also, a unique roofing problem. And of course, Joe, what do you have for us on a simple solution? Just give us just a little tease.
Just a little tease. We often talk about the benefits of composting. Well, I have a really easy DIY way to make a composting bin.
All right. Good time of the year to be thinking about that. Hey, we want to hear from you. Anything that's bugging you, that's a challenge that you may be having with your house. Maybe you have a comment on some things you would like for us to explore. Maybe you have, like we've had a number of people call in and send us emails on tips that they have, their own little version of the simple solution. We want to hear yours as well. Here's how you can reach out to us. By email, you can go to todayshomeowner.com/ask anytime at all and send us an email, or you can pick up the phone anytime at all and give us a call at 800-946-4420. That's what these homeowners did. We're going to grab a few of those calls off the hotline that came in this week.
Hey, Danny and Joe. My husband and I keep having issues with black mold on our back deck. I've tried Clorox, Wet and Forget, and also painted multiple coats of deck paint, but it keeps coming back. Any last suggestions before I end up starting over?
Okay, well, that can be very, very frustrating, and I would assume that this deck is in the shade, which
makes for nice,
relaxing time out on the deck, but also makes it for a very good environment for mold and mildew to grow. So, Joe, of course, they mentioned painting the deck, which we don't really recommend,
right?
That's basically putting a coating over it, and the mold and mildew can actually form on top of it. Much better to use a semi-transparent stain that'll soak down into that wood a little bit and prevent any moisture from accumulating there. Any thoughts on this one? Sounds like they're getting a little tired of all of the maintenance on this thing, Joe.
Yeah, I don't blame, which is part of the reason we don't recommend painting decks. And I also suspect that because, as Danny said, it's moisture is the reason. Moisture and shade create breeding grounds for mold. And so I suspect this deck is probably relatively close to the ground, probably has a lot of moisture on the ground. Maybe it's low-lying, maybe it's collecting water, it's not draining as well. And the underside of these deck boards, I suspect, are not painted, because people very seldom back prime decking, which we always recommend. If you're staining, first don't paint, but if you're staining a deck, stain all surfaces, meaning the underside, the top side. What you're doing is you're helping block moisture from passing through and either blistering or wearing out the surface, or in this case, creating mold. So she's going to have to trim back some tree branches, get some sun in there, regrade or try to prevent water from collecting under this deck if possible. But that's about the best you can do, is just try to get rid of that moisture and bring in a little sunlight.
Exactly. And, maybe just a little bit of tree trim in there to increase that. It can be frustrating, but it can be taken care of. And it might be that you continue using something like Wet and Forget in order to spray on it. And you can get ahead of it, especially if you pressure wash really well and get it clean. Then apply the Wet and Forget. That'll help repel any of those mold spores and that kind of thing. Let's go back to the hotline for another call that came in this week.
We have a three-tier brick patio in the back. Over the last couple of years, a lot of the grout between the bricks have come loose, and wanted to know what a good solution would be without having to tear all the brick out and redo it. Is there a solution to go between the brick and put new concrete in it?
Okay. using the word grout somewhat correctly, but most likely it is a cement, or more likely it's actually mortar instead of grout, since it's exterior bricks. Well, first of all, if the bricks are in fairly good shape, and what I mean by that, fairly flat, and not, you know, a lot of discrepancies in them, and, you know, up and down that could be trip hazards. If they're sitting on a good foundation and they're nice and flat, and all you have is grout that's starting to come loose, then that's not fun, but it can be corrected without a whole lot of trouble with that. What you want to do is remove every single loose piece of grout that you can. A lot of times just a small flat screwdriver, maybe one of your older screwdrivers, and you can just crawl around there with those knee pads on and get out as much as you can. You want to pressure wash it and get it nice and clean. And then, Joe, something we have found out about recently here, and I know you know grout release, which is a clear material, a clear product, comes from Custom Building Products. And you can take it, and just prior to installing grout on ceramic or something like bricks, it can be very porous, you spray this over the entire thing. That basically temporarily will repel anything that you put on it. So as you're putting the grout back in these lines that you have, it will make it much easier to clean off the excess mortar. That can save you a lot of time and really end up with a much better job. But, you know, one of the things you might want to grab here is a grout bag. A grout bag, always related to what the fancy pastry chefs, similar to that, where they are using that to create those little special flowers on top of those wedding cakes. Well, there's a heavy duty version of it that's basically a canvas with a little aluminum spout on it. You put the properly mixed kind of pancake batter consistency mortar in this bag, and it makes it a lot easier to feed that mortar into all of the grout joints you have there on your patio. You can put it all in fairly quickly, come back with a little rag and kind of work it in really well, allow it to dry just a little bit, and then it's time to break out the heavy-duty sponge or scrub brush to scrub off the mortar off of the face of the brick. And when you're cleaning things like this, you'll find that if you can get the bulk of it off, then come back and get a little more off, and then finally do your final cleaning on it, is a lot easier than just trying to get it all off at one time. And then allow it to dry very well. And then I'd recommend, since you now have it cleaned and so forth, well, you're going to have to wait a little bit of time. You'll have to check on the bag of the mortar mix that you're using to see how long you'll have to wait before you apply a coat of clear masonry sealer over the patio. It'll lock in that color, make it look a lot better. Joe, I've seen a lot of patios rescued just like this by just cleaning and a little extra grout.
Yeah, unfortunately, in this case, Diane has a three-tier brick patio. Sounds like it's pretty big. Mm-hmm. If it was a smaller patio and all that mortar or grout, whatever was in between, I would recommend just pulling it all out, which is why you very seldom see brick patios mortared in place for this exact reason. Mortar's much better when it's stacked vertically than horizontally with all the ground movement, people walking on it, which is why pavers are preferred, where there's no mortar in between, you know, or if you're using brick, you leave enough space to put in either sand or plant some kind of grass or thyme or something like that, like a little herb. But yeah, unfortunately, just pulling out the loose one and refilling it, repointing those joints is really your only option.
Hey, let's grab one more call from the Today's Homeowner Hotline.
I just purchased a Scotts Turf Builder lawn soil, and I wanted to know if I could use a spreader with this Turf Builder lawn soil and what the numbers would be on that.
Yeah, I'm not real sure on that particular thing. I would give it a try to take your spreader and open it up to probably the widest setting that you're going to have. And, of course, hopefully that soil is nice and dry as you're trying to spread it. And it may work. What do you think, Joe? I've never really tried that. I mean, spreaders and me don't get along very well at all. I always end
Why
up hitting
is that?
Them with a... Yeah, I hit them with a hammer. I don't know. It just never seems to. I either put too much out or too little out. I'm just too impatient. But what do you think about the prospect of him spreading soil on that?
Well, the first recommendation is don't hire Danny because he'll bring a hammer. But they make push spreaders and even for large areas, pull behind spreaders that will work with soil. Not all broadcast spreaders or drop spreaders would be able to handle soil, but there are ones specifically designed that will.
Hey, coming up, we've got some great tips on the proper installation of insulation under your floor, and also some great watering tips to save on your water bill. All of that and a lot more coming up right here on Today's Homeowner Radio. We'll be right back.
Today's Homeowner is brought to you by FluidMaster. Find out more at shop.fluidmaster.com.
Our radio show is heard coast to coast on some amazing radio stations like this one in Watertown, South Dakota, KSDR AM 1480. Special hello to everybody there in South Dakota. We want to help you and anybody listening this week with any of the challenges that you might be having around your home. We make it easy. Pick up the phone and call us, 800-946-4420, or you can send us an email on todayshomeowner.com/ask. Certainly had a lot of calls come in on the hotline. Let's grab another one of those calls.
This is Mac from Ocean City. My question is about insulation in a crawl space. My insulation every year keeps dripping down, and I have the plastic on the ground floor, and I'm ready to rip it out and flip it where the paper is facing the ground floor. It's a water vapor barrier. Would that affect the heating ability of the insulation on the room it's underneath? I just feel it would be a lot better to have the paper facing downward because it's so damp down there, and the insulation just seems to suck up any moisture, and it makes it drip. Now, I've used those tie rods or push up there, but it's just not enough. And instead of just going ahead and putting another piece of sheet of plastic underneath it and nail it to the joists, I'd just rather flip it, the insulation, and the paper would be the water vapor, thus stopping the insulation from dripping like water when it gets heavy. Thank you, guys. I listen to you every Sunday. You're great.
Hey, we appreciate that, Mac. I'll tell you, you got a lot going on there. Let's go back to the fundamentals on this. First of all, very important and a big mistake that's made often underneath houses is that the paper is turned down. The paper or craft facing on insulation always goes toward the heating and cooling space. So, yes, it might be counterintuitive to turn that paper up, but that is the proper way of doing it. Now, you might think, and that's what you might be thinking there, is that it's going to act more as a sponge if you have it exposed to the moisture under your house. And to a degree, that's correct, but that is the correct installation for it with the paper up facing the heating and cooled area of your home. Now, when you're talking about plastic, you never ever nail plastic to the ceiling joist. That causes a moisture trap in there, not a moisture barrier, but a moisture trap if you have plastic nailed to the bottom of your floor joist. That plastic needs to go right on the ground. You need to make sure you have it as tucked as tight around the pilings and tight around the chain wall as you possibly can. Maybe throw a little gravel here and there to keep the wind from disturbing it at all. That is your number one line of defense against moisture coming up into the house. Now, Joe, what we don't know is how many foundation vents they have around right. The perimeter, because if you don't have enough vents and you don't have enough cross ventilation, boy, you're going to have trouble all day long, and that's where that saturation and that high relative humidity percentage is going to wreak some real havoc underneath that house.
Yeah, when you have water actually dripping out of your insulation, that's a bad sign. That's an excessive amount of moisture. And yeah, I think if you went underneath there, he might see that, you know, the plastic's not fully covering the ground or there's some exposure. Maybe water is actually coming in from outside somehow and leaving puddles on the top of the plastic. I just can't imagine that much moisture that's being absorbed that it's causing actually dripping out of the insulation. So yeah, he's got to add ventilation. You can install some power vents that actually are electrically operated and they blow out. You can have an opposite end, one blowing in, one blowing out to clear out that moist air. You know, and if he's ever going to, I'm not suggesting he has to replace all this insulation. If it's wet, you have to replace it. But if you're going to do that, then we would recommend mineral wool, rock wool insulation, because it's highly moisture resistant. There's no way to install it incorrectly because there's no paper face or foil face on it. But yeah, the very first order of business, though, is to vent this and try to get that moisture out and find the source of the moisture. Maybe is there a leak somewhere? Because that seems like an excessive amount of moisture, more than I've ever heard of before.
And it also, during a heavy rain, some of the water might be just kind of drifting through there.
Exactly.
Not unusual, not good, but not unusual. So I would certainly look at driving that relative humidity down, making sure the plastic's there, making sure you've got plenty of ventilation around the perimeter, and worst case scenario, put the exhaust fan in, as Joe mentioned, that has a hygrometer on it, that when the relative humidity gets up to a certain point, it turns the fan on and moves it right out. Now, we're talking about moisture, but when you're paying for all of that water, you probably would like a few tips on how you can save on some of that water bill. In this segment, Around the Yard segment, brought to you by Pavestone. As the weather cools off, many of us think less about watering your lawn and your gardens. But even in cooler temperatures, plants need moisture to remain healthy. And if autumn is a dry season where you live, it's especially important to pay attention to how much water your yard is getting. If you need to augment the natural rainfall with your irrigation system, here's some ways to really minimize that water waste and maximize what rainfall you do get. First, raise the height of the blade of your lawnmower. Mowing close to the ground allows the soil to dry out a lot quicker, plus the slightly taller grass will require less water to begin with. Next, check your garden hose connections at the hose bib and between hoses to make sure they aren't leaking. Boy, hoses are notorious for that. Another reason to buy a good quality hose instead of one of those cheap ones that hard to keep them from leaking. Now, when you do water with a hose, use a spray handle or a shutoff control so that you only apply water exactly where it's needed. Also consider watering early in the morning. At that time of the day, the temperatures are cooler and the evaporation rate is at its lowest. Now, if you apply a generous layer of mulch in your gardens, it'll help the soil to retain the moisture so you can water less frequently. And finally, if your home has downspouts, hey, consider buying a rain barrel to put under one or more of your downspouts. You can collect all of that rainwater for use in the garden without adding a penny to your utility bill. This Around the Yard segment brought to you by our friends at Pavestone. Also encourage you to go by todayshomeowner.com and look for some other watering tips, including how to make your own homemade rain barrel that I'm telling you really does work very, very well. Back to our emails. You can send us one right now, todayshomeowner.com/ask. This one came in from Molly in Kansas. We just got brand new sliding windows. Our old ones had a little gadget that popped out so the window could only open just a few inches for security if you wanted to sleep with the windows open. The new ones don't have that feature. Now, short of using dowels, do you know of anything that might work in this case? Joe, you know, a lot of hotels, I think probably all the hotels now that had functional windows at some point.
Right.
We'll have those little stops like that. And a lot of times it's just a small little bracket that hooks on the track of the window.
Exactly. Yep.
And it screws into there so that when you open it, it just stops. So that is certainly the dowel that she's speaking of. Cutting the dowel and dropping it in the track is still a pretty good way of doing it. But some people may think, well, the bad guy could get his hand in there and pull that dowel out or whatever.
Yes.
So, you know, I could see some concern on that. But what other suggestion might you have for Molly?
Well, as you said, they do make security locks specifically designed for sliding windows. The one I'm familiar with is a company called Defender. And they're just little aluminum blocks with like a thumb screw, if I remember correctly. And they're very affordable. I think you buy four of them. They're about $1 a piece or something like that. And then there's another company that makes a keyed stopper. It's called, a lock stopper or something like that. It's a little more expensive, $10 or $12. But it has a key in it. So when you lock it in place, you can actually turn the key so no one can remove it. But if Molly went online or went to Home Center or hardware store, she could probably find, there are, like I said, these are specifically designed for sliding windows.
Hey, coming up, we're going to be talking to a homeowner who's having a little problem with the 3-year-old roof. We're going to give him a couple things he needs to check on there. And we're also going to share with you our Today's Homeowner Four Seasons of Home Ownership fall list brought to you by the Home Depot. All of that and a brand new simple solution coming up in just a little bit right here on Today's Homeowner Radio. We'll be right back.
Today's Homeowner is brought to you by Tight Bond, the pro's advantage.
Are you currently getting the Today's Homeowner e-newsletter? Well, you should. I'll tell you, there's a lot of information going out every single week, all of it designed to help you have the best looking and most energy efficient home in your neighborhood. Very, very easy to get. All you have to do is go to todayshomeowner.com/newsletter. We're going to go right back to the hotline right now. John is on the phone from Daytona Beach.
I got up a 2-year-old roof that was replaced because of hail damage. And in the front, right above the garage, there's a small roof landing there, which is about 6 foot deep, and obviously the length of the garage, which is 12 foot. Well, the problem is every time I get a torrential rain down here, I'm noticing the little brown spots inside the garage. Now the garage, where the brown spots are almost right in the middle of the roof that's outside. Now, this is not the main roof. This is just the roof that landing that comes out from the garage. And I've put a stain blocker on to try to determine where it is, but it happened again yesterday. And just trying to figure out, you know, what the problem could be. I had the peel and stick put down, but I don't know if it's a flashing issue or what, but it's hard to determine what to do with it.
All righty. Well, first of all, hate that you're having any kind of trouble with a 3-year-old roof. You should, it's one of those things, once you pay that money for that roof, you kind of want to sit back and relax on those rainy days instead of worrying about anything that might be leaking. But things happen. And what I would do, John, most likely, there's no insulation in that attic above your garage. You need to get in that garage attic with a good bright flashlight and see if water's dripping. If it is dripping and causing a stain on the face of the drywall inside the garage, then you'll definitely be able to see a larger spot on top of the drywall. Now, it's possible this is an old stain and it is not something that's active. That we certainly hope that for you, but you really need to get up in there, especially, I mean, it's even better when it's raining. It's going to be a little cooler and be able to really see if that leak is active, and if so, where it's coming from. So many times when you're talking about a roof that's not part of the main roof, a lot of times it can just be debris that's gathering there and causing a little damming effect and allowing that water to work its way up underneath the seam. But Joe, I think if he can get up in that attic, that'll answer all the questions.
Yeah, because you can usually see where water's coming in. You might not be able to tell immediately how it's getting in, but at least you'll see, you know, where the approximate area is. First thing I thought is whenever you see small brown spots on a drywall ceiling, sometimes it's the rusted nail heads because they keep getting exposed to water and they start rusting. And although they might not see the screw head itself, it rusts, and this rust bleeds through the joint compound and the tape and the paint and everything else. So, I mean, that would be an indication that there's moisture up there somewhere. So yeah, he didn't have to get up there and check it out. And sometimes that is where a slightly slanted roof meets a steeper pitched roof, right at that joint is a common place where you're going to get water leaking in. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing else to do but get inside and check from outside. You can't really tell.
And, you know, another thing, the old water test, get your water hose, turn it on wide open, get inside the attic, have someone up top, and then just start at the lower part of the roof and just try to make it leak. Just put that water on back and forth like it's raining. Keep moving it up. I tell you what we've done more than one time is to have your cell phone on speakerphone, both one person inside, one person outside, so that the minute you see any water dripping through there, you can pinpoint it, you can try it again, and then you can see exactly where it takes out all the guesswork. Because if you're introducing water in one area and it's coming out the same area underneath, there you go. That's where the leak is. So hope we've been able to help you on that. Here's another email. Hey, you want to send us an email? Do so right now. todayshomeowner.com/ask. This one came in from Mark in Buffalo, New York. Hey, I have an old carriage house that I'm remodeling, and I want to install a steel spiral staircase. I'd like to paint it black, but I want to make sure that the paint sticks real well. Should I add an etching primer first and then use latex paint? Well, that's a tough one. I've painted a few of those things, Joe, when we've installed them before, and without a doubt, you want to get some really good paint on there. Now, what we don't know is if this is an old or new staircase. If it is a new one, then, and you know, that has been fabricated, one of the things you want to do there is to make sure you get all the oil and residue off of it, because often they'll really be pretty slick and no paint's going to stick to that. So really wiping that down really good with a tack rag and mineral spirits to get everything off. But if it's an existing one that maybe he salvaged, there's a fair amount of work that's possibly involved in that. And if it's an old one, watch out for the lead, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You should always test for lead first. You can buy little test kits at Home Depot and make sure if it's lead, then you have to bring it someplace else to have them strip off that paint. But I think what he's referring to is an automotive self-etching primer, which contains an acid and a zinc that burns into and etches the metal, and then the zinc seals the surface. And the idea is that you're preparing the surface for paint. That's not the top coat. That's just the primer that prepares it. And then you can put on, I think they're formulated for use with enamel-based paint, but either way, you have to read the directions. But yeah, if he's going to be painting this and he doesn't want to do it again, I would highly recommend using that self-etching primer first, and then the appropriate paint on top of that.
There you go. Okay, another email here from Alice in Wisconsin, wondering if you could help me with advice on fixing a ceiling leak that's coming in from my fireplace chimney. I've had it looked at, and one contractor says we can install new flashing, repair some cracks, and repoint the bricks. Another mason said that he can't do the work until the temperature is over 50 degrees. Will the repairs fail if it's done in cold weather? Well, that's good cautionary, good thought there, Alice. I do recommend that the temperature be, let's say, above 40 and would hold and kind of, you know, rise to that. Probably it may need new flashing, and certainly if you see any cracks and repointing the bricks is generally the first thing you would do. But also, once you get all of that done, we really recommend that you seal all of the bricks on the outside. You can do that with a clear masonry sealer, pump up sprayer, two or three coats on the outside of it. That'll really seal up all of the pores of the masonry and keep that from leaking. But don't forget about the crown of the chimney. A lot of times that's where the leak will originate and then drift back down through to show up downstairs. But a good experienced roofer has a lot of experience dealing with the fireplace chimney, so don't hesitate to get a couple other bids to make sure that you feel comfortable with that. Hey, coming up, we're going to talk about the four seasons of home ownership and share with you the fall checklist, a few things that you can kind of get ahead of the curve and have the best looking house on the block. That and a whole lot more right here on Today's Homeowner Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Today's Homeowner with Danny Lipford, brought to you by Custom Building Products, the leader in flooring preparation products and tile and stone installation systems.
I'm Danny Lipford, along with my buddy Joe Truini, and we're about to share with you the fall checklist of our four seasons of home ownership. If you've been a listener of ours for a while, you know that we have four different lists that we share with you at the start of each season. Kind of pinpoints a number of things that you should consider doing at your house right now. And the good thing about it, it doesn't cost you a lot of money to complete this list, and often some of the things that are on the list may not even apply to your house. It makes it even easier. One of the first things that we have on almost all of the list is to replace your air conditioning and heating system filters. Make sure that you vacuum that area behind the filters. That's important because, you know, no matter what kind of filter you have in there, a little bit of debris will get through it, some dust and maybe some pet dander and such, and you can vacuum all of that out when you replace that filter. Next, make sure you clean and inspect those gutters and downspouts and repair if needed. You're going to have a lot of leaves hitting in there. You're going to need to make sure that you keep them clean. Now's a good time to start the season with a nice clean gutter system.
And then you want to rake the leaves from your lawn, which might seem obvious, but if you don't rake up those leaves, what they can do is get wet and they get matted and wind up killing the grass. So you definitely want to rake all the leaves off your lawn and then drain the gas from your lawnmower and tune up the engine and sharpen the blade. Now you might wonder, why do I have to do that now? I'm not going to be using it for a few months. Well, that's the whole point. If you do it now, you'll be ready to go come spring. Your mower will be ready to go. And if you want to drain the gas, what I typically do, and this has worked great for me, is at the last mowing of the year. What I do is I make sure there's only a little bit of gas left in the mower and I finish mowing the lawn. Then I just let the mower run dry. I just let it run until it runs out of gas, and that cleans out all the gas from the carburetor and the entire fuel line so that, again, it's ready to go come spring.
And, you know, if you don't have enough grass to burn out all of that gas, just go next door in your neighbor's yard and start mowing a little bit. It'll run out of gas, and, of course, you won't finish the job, but what a great hint, a nice little subtle hint that, you know, hey, buddy, you might need to mow your grass. You know, this.
Yeah,
this,
yeah, mow half his grass.
Yeah, this is great for neighborhood relations. Next on the list of our top 10 fall checklist is if you have storm windows and storm doors and you're in an area of the country that routinely remove these during the summer and then reinstall them, now's the time. Make sure that they're nice and clean and all operating properly. Go ahead and install those windows and doors right now. Also, great time to drain and flush out the water heater. Everything you need to know about how to do anything on this list is available with articles and videos at todayshomeowner.com. Why drain and flush out a water heater? If you haven't done it before, do it one time and you'll get it immediately. You'll be surprised at everything that comes out of that water heater that's robbing you of energy dollars as well as making it less efficient. Could even make it last a lot, you know, fewer days than it should. So you can check it out by going to todayshomeowner.com.
Fall is also the time of year you want to test your smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors. We're going to be spending more and more time indoors, possibly using fireplaces and other heating devices. So check those, make sure they're all operating properly. And while you're at it, check the weather stripping around all doors and windows and replace any weather stripping that's damaged or missing, because you want to keep that cold weather out.
And the last two things on our must-do list of our fall checklist of the four seasons of homeownership: drain your lawn irrigation system. You know, in anticipation of that cold, cold weather, there are many tricks on how to drain that, with using small air compressors to blow it through, canned air, a lot of different ways that you can make sure that that water's out of there to where you're not going to have some costly repairs if and when it freezes. And to keep that cold air out of the house this winter, caulk all the cracks on the exterior of your home. Very easy thing to do that can make a big, big difference. Now, this list may seem extensive, but in these 10 things that we're doing here, the total time will be less than 12 hours. Total cost, less than $100. I'm sure that got your attention to really feel good about it. Now, you can go to todayshomeowner.com/four seasons and download the entire list. Now, we also have a few extra things there. If time and budget allow, we have a few suggestions on some things that you can do. If you're a little ambitious and you get this first must-do list done, you can have some other things, and also just some other things, a little few extra things that we mention as well, just to kind to round out a few of the things that we recommend that you do around your house as we're moving in to the colder weather that's right around the corner. And all of this is brought to you by our friends at Home Depot, and all of the materials that you need are waiting on you in the aisles of Home Depot. Joe, we have a simple solution coming up. Why don't you give us a little tip of what we might hear in a few minutes?
All right. It's how to make your own composting bin.
All right. Boy, I tell you, more and more people are understanding the value of that and wanting to do it. Certainly the pandemic fueled a lot of people in doing a lot of gardening around the house. So I look forward, I'm sure you should look forward to hearing this new simple solution that's going to be delivered here in just a few minutes. You're listening to Today's Homeowner Radio. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Today's Homeowner Radio. Here are Danny and Joe.
You know, one of the things that we really pride ourselves here on Today's Homeowner Media and radio and TV and todayshomeowner.com is to really keep a very practical, realistic approach to home ownership, home improvement, home maintenance, and all of that. And that's what the foundation of the Simple Solution is all about, is getting simple solutions to some common problems. Joe, what do you have for us today?
All right, Danny, we were talking about how many people enjoy the benefits of composting. And if you build an outdoor, like, corral which I did originally when I started composting. It's hard to keep the raccoons out. It was like a buffet. Every time I looked out there was a bunch of raccoons eating everything up. So the materials didn't get a chance to break down. And if you buy a composting bin, they're relatively expensive, but here's how to make one from an old plastic trash can. What you want to do is drill some 5/8-inch diameter holes through the bottom and all around the sides of the can. That allows for drainage and ventilation. And then set the can, the trash can, set it on top of some wooden blocks or some bricks, even better, because you want air to be able to circulate underneath. And when the can, you just snap on the lid and you fill it up with your composting materials. And when the can is about half filled or so, what you do is make sure the lid's on nice and securely. You just tip it over and just roll it around back and forth a few times by just to mix up and redistribute the compost that's inside. And we're talking about, you know, grass clippings, leaves, kitchen scraps, no meat, no grease, nothing like that. And then just tip it back up on its bottom, again, on top of some blocks to allow air to circulate. And within really 3 or 4 weeks, you'll see that material start to break down into rich compost you can use in your lawn and garden next spring.
That also during the warmer seasons, that heat and that, you know, creating heat in that metal can help quite a bit as well, you know, to kind of help, you know, increase that decomposition and so forth. And, you know, that makes you feel pretty darn good. It's like you're getting free soil and really
That's right.
good material to use when you're doing that. And even, you know, if you wanted to, you know, after it decomposes a little bit, if you wanted to add some good topsoil to it and go ahead and continue the mixing there, then heck, you're ready to go right to the garden with that or
That's
into
right.
some containers and so forth. So I love that part of it. We're going to start doing a little composting here very, very soon. Like you say, you've got to keep the varmints out of it. They do treat it like a buffet.
They do indeed, yes.
Hey, I want to remind you what you can see on the Today's Homeowner television show this weekend. It's a syndicated television show entering in its 25th season on national television. You can go to todayshomeowner.com and find out where you can see it in your area. This week is A Shed for All Seasons, a very popular show that we aired just a month or so ago. And it kind of takes a interesting approach to a storage building. Now, you know, many of us have storage buildings, and of course, they can get to be quite a mess and kind of almost lose their direction a little bit. Well, this particular homeowner wanted to create a nice little area, a little oasis for her to do some painting on some different artwork. So, but she still needed the storage. So how could you combine a little art studio with a storage unit? Well, it's all about planning, utilizing some existing cabinets, creating some new shelving, and also moving all of the tools that could be stored outside to the outside, like rakes and shovels and so forth, but still keep them out of the rain and still very accessible, increase in lighting and a lighter color inside, plenty of natural light, and in order to use it 365 days a year, a little heating and a little cooling, it all came together. Again, you'll want to see this really cool show and hope you'll join us every week for the Today's Homeowner television show starting its 25th season at the end of October. We're pretty excited about that milestone in the Today's Homeowner media career. Hey, that pretty much wraps up the show for this week. We're so glad you were able to spend some of your busy weekend with us. I always appreciate my co-host Joe Truini, our engineer producer Corey Wilson, and the whole Today's Homeowner family saying we hope you have a fantastic weekend and look forward to seeing you again next week here on Today's Homeowner Radio. We'll see you then.